You're listening to Charisma Kills Radio with special guest Kurt Amaker.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Jesse Craig, your host for Charisma Kills Radio. This episode was recorded several months ago and contains some dated information. But since Kurt was kind enough to take time off from his work on the Cradle of Filth comic to do this interview, it would be a crime to let it go to waste. I've known Kurt for a few years now. He's a great guy, an extraordinarily talented writer, and all around very interesting man. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show, Kurt. How are you today?
Pretty well, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
I believe the last time I saw you was at the Black Christmas event at Wyatt's Comics and Cards in Hammond.
Right. We did a little holiday signing there. That was right after I'd made the decision to start working for myself and working on writing comics full time. So just wanted to test the waters and do a little local signing, see how it would go. Unfortunately, I think all the university students were gone for Christmas already, so it went really well. But so hopefully next time we'll catch them when there are more people in town.
Oh, that's right. You're working on your own imprint. How's that going?
It's fine. We just started the company because obviously at some point you have to start keeping things official. You have to start paying taxes, and people aren't going to deal with you if you're just a guy. They need a company name. You need a federal tax ID. You need to produce documentation that shows that you're running a business and you're not just winging it out of your house. When I started getting with Cradle of Filth and a couple of his other artists and started becoming full-time, we have the potential to actually, to be frank, bring in more revenue than you would just, doing signings and stuff for cash here and there. Then you have to start being a little more adult about it. And so the company is called Dark Notes Press, which is funny because there's about 100 other publishing companies called Dark Wood and Dark Oak and all sorts of other things that sound exactly the same. And I thought about a couple of different names, and that was the only one I could find that no one had taken or it hadn't been misused. It could not be easily parodied, and the abbreviation sounded okay, DNP, just like IDW, that kind of thing. And so we're going to use that to put out the Cradle of Filth graphic novel, Danny Filth's poetry book, which will be out later this year. And then the third issue of the 69 Eyes comic, I'm picking that up. Seraphimera is moving on from that. And they've asked me to go ahead and just take care of the book. So I'm going to do that. And then there's going to be a relaunched, remastered collection of Dead Souls that's going to be coming out sometime later this year, hopefully, and that'll come out under the imprint as well. Is it just that I've put out several books over the years, and they've all been through Seraphimera, and I own the copyright on them, and I think Seraphimera is moving on to just focus on their literary journal and poetry and that kind of stuff, and less on comics. And so I need to eventually put some of these things back in print, and so I have to have a company to do it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work involved in a project like that. I started Charisma Kills Studios back in 2011, and I'm still working to get it all official. Tad Caldwell and the Monster Kid, that's the last of your works that I've read. It's been well received and gained a lot of praise from readers and writers in the industry itself. Victor Gishler, comics writer and novelist, as I see on the cover, calls it a fun, quirky, hidden gem.
Right. Yeah, Gish was awesome. I mean, he's a good friend, and he was into the book. And I love Tad Caldwell. I think it's the best thing I've ever written. And it's funny because it's so not me. It's not the kind of navel-gazing, dark, brooding kind of goth action or whatever that I can write that kind of. I mean, I love writing that kind of stuff, but it's a lot easier for me to write that because it comes more naturally to me, whereas Tad Caldwell had to take on a different character's voice who was definitely not an analog of me or in any way. He had some similarities, but it was a very, very different kind of character and had to inhabit that voice and not just wing it and say what I would say in that kind of situation.
And I've heard from more than one person that puts Tad Caldwell right up there with the works of Stephen King. So do you have any plans to do any more work with Tad Caldwell?
I hope so. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I mean, that is high praise indeed. And I think Tad Caldwell has a future. I think there could be sequels or other adaptations. There's talk and rumbling and some of it I can't actually get into at this point because nothing's been signed yet, but I'm glad it's been so well received. And I'm especially glad that it's been received by people outside of the kind of goth vampire horror community, that it's been more embraced by just regular comic book fans. I mean, not that comic book fans are regular by any stretch of the imagination, but it's been embraced by other people that I think might not be interested in the kind of stuff that I often write. And so I'm glad, and I hope that, again, I can kind of capitalize on that and get, you know, I mean, it's going to be back in print for one thing. I'm down to a handful of copies. I have a DJ gig in Pensacola. The Black Syndicate is a promotional group, and they do kind of goth industrial parties every few months or once a quarter or something like that. And I'm one of the headlining DJs there. We're going to do a graphic novel signing beforehand at the venue, kind of out in the hallway or something. And I'm down to like 10 copies, and hopefully I can sell them all, because we're already gearing up for a reprint through Dark Notes. I've been working through a printer and obviously swapping out the Seraphimera stuff for my own imprint. And we're going to get a lot more copies on hand this time, because obviously we're about to run out.
Well, selling out a product is always a good sign. Your current project, and the one that has everyone excited, the Cradle of Filth Venus Adversa comic. It just sounds like such an amazing project to be a part of. What's the status on that, and how did that come about?
Yeah, that's the big news. That was what really was the springboard off what I was able to move out of working a day job and working for myself, because obviously Cradle's a high-profile band. It's a high-profile project, and it's brought a lot of really positive attention to the work I've been putting in for the past 5-10 years, and I'm very happy with how the graphic novel is turning out. It is almost ready to go to the printer. Danny had to go on tour with Behemoth, and they're touring Europe, but it's about to be finished. He wanted some time to work on his introductions and some of the other contributions he has to the book. And in the meantime, Montgomery Borer, the artist, and I are going through and making corrections and fixing up the art here and there, correcting some of the little bits and pieces and bits and bobs and things that need to be fixed in the art. And I'm going to start editing the prose and lettering here relatively soon as well. Not everything from just rewriting portions of it if it needs it, or checking for spelling errors and lettering mistakes, missized fonts, that kind of stuff, just like you do. So, and then hopefully we'll be able to get this stuff out the door, because I know we experienced a lengthy delay in trying to get it finished. I know some of the fans are chomping at the bit, wanting to get this thing in their hand, as well as all the merch, the t-shirts and the Danny Filth voodoo dolls that we had produced and everything. And said, I'm sorry about that, because you hate to take people's money and then make them sit there and wait for an extra 3 months, but it's just, we can't send it out if it's not done.
Yes, we were one of the many that participated in the Kickstarter for that project. So definitely looking forward to it. So writing classes, you are currently setting up to start teaching comic writing classes, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to try to do it the second and fourth Thursday of every month. It's going to be upstairs at BSI Comics across from Lakeside Mall. And what it is a one-shot, four-hour class. There's going to be breaks in there, obviously. It's not going to be just 4 hours of me talking nonstop. And it's going to be pretty much how to take an idea or a blurb, even just a paragraph, and flesh that out into a full script, and then how to get with a creative team, how to hire people, how to get an idea, turned it into a comic, and get it out the door. And even if you don't have any money, there are sort of tricks and ways around that that we'll go over. And said, it's a one-time course. It's going to be, each class is the same thing. So there are going to be weeks where I'm sure we just won't have it, because, you know, you can only give that class to so many people. And there'll be times where we have a ton of people, and then other times we'll have three or four people. And as long as we get a handful of people, I'll go ahead and teach the class. Otherwise, I'll just find something else to do that evening.
Unfortunately, I do not think that I'm going to be able to make that class. For those that are interested but can't make it out to the New Orleans area, do you have any plans to carry the class outside of the city?
Sure. It's actually, I talked to Wyatt Higginbotham about that this morning. He's I think he may come down, maybe hopefully bring some people and then see the class. And then he, you know, it's the kind of thing, if I can drive over there and do the class too, I'll be happy to. And I was thinking about that actually, because there are definitely comic shops all over the Gulf South. And it may just be that somebody doesn't want to drive in from Jackson or from Biloxi or something like that, or wherever else. And I can just go, but I need to get the presentation finished and actually give the class first, because obviously it's an ongoing process developing the lecture and fixing the PowerPoint and making sure that it's not just informative, but interesting and funny and all the things that you have to do when you're dealing with adult learners. You don't have the luxury, especially when people are paying you, you don't have the luxury of like an elementary school teacher or a high school teacher where you can just do it and you have a captive audience. So last thing I want to hear is that the class was terrible and that people shouldn't go.
Writing is definitely something that I have started to take a more serious interest in myself. My personal involvement with comic book creation has always been from an art standpoint, and I'm looking to increase the quality of my comics by researching more of the writing aspect.
But yeah, that's the thing, is that some people, obviously there are a lot of great artists out there, and there's some people that just aren't going to get good no matter how hard they try, and that's unfortunate. I'm not saying that you shouldn't try, obviously, if you really want to do art, but art is, to be able to be a good comic artist takes years and years and years of development. Whereas I think that there's a lot more fertile ground for someone that wants to put the time and the effort in to be at least a decent writer. Obviously you should try to be a great writer, but there's a lot more opportunities out there. I know there are a lot of comic fans that feel kind of, I don't want to say they feel shut out, but there's people talk about, how do you break in as an artist? How do you break in as an artist? You go in the portfolio reviews and all these other things. And there's a lot of people that are not professional creators. Not as, are there? They would like to create, but they have absolutely no idea how to break in as a writer. They have no clue where to even start. They have a blurb or an idea that might be developed into something strong and worth reading eventually, but they're just kind of lost. And hopefully that, you know, if they come to this, they can kind of learn from my mistakes and my experience and, then walk off with some inspiration and a kind of drive. And also they'll have a pretty lengthy printed handout. For lack of a better expression, it's just an idiot's guide to getting a comic created. And so once it's, once they walk off with that, then it's a lot easier. I think hopefully they can be able to turn it into something interesting.
Well, I do wish you luck with that, and I hope it takes off. I would really like to attend one of your classes. Okay, so how about we move on to Fantasia? Unfortunately, this episode will probably not be heard until after Fantasia, but let's go ahead and talk about it anyway. How's that going, and how did that get started?
Oh, geez, Fantasia. Fucking Fantasia. Fantasia started out in 2011, when Yerky 69, who is the singer for the 69 Eyes, or a very famous multi-platinum selling Finnish goth band. I know multi-platinum and goth usually don't really go together unless you're talking about maybe The Cure or Nine Inch Nails, or I mean, people will probably burn me alive if they hear me call Nine Inch Nails a goth band, but let's just say the dark music umbrella. But the 69 Eyes are hugely popular in Finland and Europe. Their drummer, Jussi, was just one of the judges for this past season on Idols, which is Finland's version of American Idol. And he's one of the celebrity judges, and the band performed, not as contestants, but just as guest performers at the season finale. In fact, they had to drum up kind of a pop song and put out a new greatest hits comp just to capitalize on the attention that UC69, the drummer, was getting. Yerky, who we booked the band with this promotional team I was with called Corrosion back in 2009, I believe. And Yerky and I went out after with everybody from the opening bands and all of the bands. We went out to the goth bar that was in the French Quarter at the time, and we just got uproariously drunk. And Yerky and I hung out and talked a lot and just sort of partied all night. And then he got back in touch with me a couple of years later and asked if I would host him for a DJ night in New Orleans. And just because he DJs in Finland, just because it's fun, you know, just runs nightclubs and stuff like that. And So I said, all right, so we threw a night together. He came out. It was really well attended. The night we had a month to promote it, and we basically sold out the place, or sold out, you know, in a place that doesn't really keep ticket count. You know, you're just taking $12 at the door or whatever, which is not how much it costs this year. Let me be close, be clear about that. Year two, we brought Yerky back to DJ, and Aurelio Voltaire, the guitarist and singer, we brought him to do an acoustic set. Again, very easy to set up, no big setup and tear down. Third year, we had Christian Death, who were a very famous kind of goth death rock band from California that has been around since late 70s, I guess, early 80s, and they haven't played in New Orleans in forever, if they have at all. I know they played in Baton Rouge before, but they performed. We went to a bigger venue. We went to the Howlin' Wolf. We're moving from Howlin' Wolf to One Eye Jacks this year, and we're also taking it from out of the summer when it's traditionally been, putting it in on May 17th this year. So we're going to be at One Eye Jacks, which is straight in the heart of the French Quarter. It's fairly close to the Dungeon, which I'm sure we'll all gravitate thereafter. And it's doors open at 9. We're going to have DJs. We're going to have an opening band, a local opening band called Clockwork Elvis. And we're doing more of a gothabilly rock, like dark rockabilly theme this year. The reason is because Yerky 69's other band is actually performing, which is called the 69 Cats, C-A-T-S. And they do, they're kind of more in the vein of like the Cramps or the Necromantics or those kind of, you know, old style sort of dark rock bands that play, you sound like you're playing Elvis, but you're singing about bats and vampires and haunted castles and that kind of shit. And so they're going to play, and we're going to pick a new theme this year. We've never done themes before. We've always just had a generic vampire theme. And then we're going to pick and, you know, do that. The music's going to be different. And then hopefully that'll kind of show people that we're starting to break away a little bit from being completely associated with the television show True Blood, which historically we're sort of the unofficial True Blood party. HBO gave us permission to use the name Fangtasia, which is obviously the vampire bar in Shreveport in that series. But they declined to participate. They just said, you can use the name, we're giving you permission, but we're not, you know, third party. We don't really want to come out from LA to deal with it. And so I said, all right, that's fine. All I want is the name. So we've been doing that, but True Blood is actually ending this year. This is the last season that's going to be starting up relatively soon here. And so we need to start moving away from that a little bit. And I think that having a theme that's kind of different, and obviously we have two bands now instead of just one, it's kind of, we're slowly building out bit by bit. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I said, I think some people are going to, hopefully people will be into the music. We're still going to play some gothic rock and 80s music and stuff mixed in, but there'll be a little more like rock and roll. And I don't know if you're familiar with psychobilly or kind of nouveau rockabilly or anything like that. We're going to play a lot of that stuff, you know, Ghoul Town, Necromantics, Cramps, Horton Heat, all that kind of stuff. So,
oh yeah, the good Reverend
Horton. And I love all that music. I mean, among other things, I like a lot of different kinds of music, but that'll be kind of a cool change for me, because I dearly love that sort of thing. And we're also going to be launching the third and final issue of the 69 Eyes comic book, at least for this particular mini series. So it's going to be a lot of cool shit there. People can get fake vampire fangs made if they want. Lord Chaz will be hosting the events, and there'll be some burlesque dancers, and you know, it's going to be a good time. I'm very, very excited about it.
For those listeners out there who would like to get more information on Fangtasia, how can they go about that?
Yeah, we have a website. It's fangtasiaevent.com. Now, the website is being updated as we speak, so it may still have information from the last years. We're a little late in getting the website turned over. So tickets should be going on sale either by Mardi Gras, I would say. We're going to have some street-level advertising. We have some handbills and stuff like that we'll start floating around. And obviously the big advertising push is going to come right after Mardi Gras. I mean, you can't compete with the greatest show on earth. So it's a good time for us to get a basic level of awareness, but nobody's going to go out and like buy tickets over Mardi Gras weekend. We don't think that, but we'll have hopefully by the time Mardi Gras wraps, the site will be updated. The tickets will be on sale, and then they'll just go through, if they go through oneeyejacks.net, which is the venue, or fangtasiaevent.com, then they can go get tickets there. And tickets are, I think, going to be $25 a head. There's no no VIP package or anything like that this year. We're trying to keep things a little more straight and less confusing. Last year we had a pre-party like a month before, and then we had a VIP tour package. And I think a lot of it threw people off because they thought the pre-party was the main event, and then it just ended up being it's one event, one ticket price. You know, come in, have a good time, see some bands, that kind of thing, and then probably, you know, go out till dawn afterwards at the dungeon or something.
Definitely sounds like a good time. Well, I know that you are a very busy man and have a prior engagement that you need to get to, but before we go, where can people locate your books?
Just get them from my website. KurtAmaker.com is the best place right now. I mean, my stuff's on Amazon. My old publisher, Seraphemera, probably has some. Actually, no, I think they turned over, except for the 69 Eyes comic book, I think Seraphemera turned over the rest of their inventory to me. As I said, they're kind of moving away from comics from what I can tell. Obviously, I don't run Seraphemera. I don't own it. And Mark Morash and I are still very good friends, but I think they're shifting away and they're focusing on this literary journal that they've been putting out called Garbanzo, and maybe doing more kind of boutique poetry publishing and things like that. So they turned over a lot of at least my stock, my personal books, so back over to me, because now I have my own web store and stuff like that. So I mean, the most helpful thing is to just go through my website, KurtAmaker.com. But if people don't want to do that, then they can go through Amazon and some stuff maybe at Barnes & Noble, and obviously all the comic shops in the New Orleans area. I'm going to try to get Tad Caldwell back in the Diamond catalog. It was, you know, obviously we filled one order, but since this is a second printing, I may resubmit it and see if they want to carry it again. But, you know, Diamond is just... I mean, Diamond is really where you go if you want to get Spider-Man, X-Men, Batman. Not there's anything wrong with that kind of stuff, but you really have to go on the internet to find more like alternative comics these days.
Well, it was indeed a honor and pleasure to have you on the show, and I appreciate you taking time off from your schedule to talk to us. As we wrap this up, is there anything you would like to add?
All right. Well, very cool. I said the other thing is we'll be probably running a new Kickstarter for the renewed Dead Souls trade, or the resurrected Dead Souls trade paperback, probably in the next month or two. We're assembling footage, and we've got some very, very cool people that are going to be, you know, that are going to be on the little mini documentary we're going to do for it. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm happy to do it. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate you guys having me on the show and everything.
All right. Well, thanks again for being on the show. It was, again, a pleasure. Maybe we can have you back again in the future.
All right. Well, cool, man. I appreciate it. If you guys need anything else, you know, give me a call. I'm always available.
Will do. And that wraps up this episode of Charisma Kills Radio. Thanks for listening. If you are interested in the intro and outro music for this episode, it was provided by the Consortium of Genius. The song was Bite Me. You can find the Consortium of Genius at consortiumofgenius.com. Since the recording of this episode, the Cradle of Filth comic, The Curse of Venus Aversa, has been released. You can order your copy at darknotespress.com. Also, the Kickstarter for the Dead Souls trade paperback starts June 23rd. You can get in on that. And the third book in the 69 Eyes trilogy has been released, which you can also find at darknotespress.com. And as you know, we missed Fangtasia, but have no fear. It is an annual event, so you can go to FangtasiaEvent.com and keep an eye out for updates on the next Fangtasia. You can check us out at CharismaKills.com. Go to the Charisma Kills Radio link, and you can find show notes and additional information on this episode. And you can follow Charisma Kills Studios on Facebook. Thank you.